and welcome to another edition of The Talk of the Street. Carlsberg don't make an official Coronation Street catch-up podcast, but if it did, there's a 50-50 chance it would be this one. Maybe. I'm Gavin.
And I'm eating gummy bears.
Yeah, which is just rude. This is going to be a weird show tonight because we're doing this on a Thursday evening, so we haven't even seen Friday episodes, obviously. Reason for this is we have life stuff to do on Friday, and then we have a normal weekend of business. That means if we don't record it tonight, we might not get around to having it recorded and edited until Tuesday. By that point, who cares?
Right.
So we'll try to summarise Friday at the start of next week's show, which you've all probably already seen, except for those of you who don't watch the show at all.
Which is most of you.
Well, some of you. I don't know if it'd be most of you.
Which is most of our American listeners, I think.
A lot of BritBox people.
A few.
Again, we've asked this question before, but if you're watching the show in the US, explain how.
They're probably doing BritBox just like us.
Yep.
But I mean, we know people who are British, who live in America, who listen to us and don't watch Corey.
Yeah.
So, meh.
I was listening to a lot of Mice and Ken today, which I do enjoy.
Yeah, I miss those guys.
I'm so sad they don't do it.
Me too.
And I think they had the same situation where, although I think they said that most of their friends and family neither appreciate nor listen to the podcast. I don't think we were quite as unlucky as that. It's like,
well,
at least
I don't
some
think,
of our friends listen.
Yeah, our friends listen. Our family doesn't, I don't think.
I'm not even aware my family know that I do this.
Well, my family does, and they don't care.
They just don't give a shit.
They just don't care.
But thankfully, you don't give a shit about them either.
That's not true.
I'm being facetious.
Right. They just don't care about the podcast. They care about us.
Yeah. One would hope. Shall we preamble, my dear?
We'd better.
Yeah, because our mailbag is quite brimming this week.
It's chock-a-block full.
No doubt, because the show was so great last week.
It really was.
So we've had to be a little bit selective, so apologies if you've been in touch and we don't read your correspondence out. So Chris has been back in touch. No word about the renovations he's undertaking, but Chris says, I just said what the fuck out loud in a packed train travelling between Glasgow and Liverpool when Helen said she didn't know who Howard Keel was. Well, bless my beautiful hide, he was a star of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Which is one of my favourite movies.
And of course was Miss Ellie's love interest in Dallas, not Dynasty as I said, after the passing
of
Jock
don't watch.
Ewing. At time of writing, I'm but 8 minutes into the podcast and as of yet have learned little of your take on the week's goings on in Weatherfield, but feel intimately and uncomfortably overfamiliar with the intricacies of Helen's digestive system.
I'm an American. I overshare. But yes, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers was a movie that I watched over and over and over and over and over again as a child. I just didn't know anybody's names as far as the actors were concerned. Plus, Adam Pottersby wasn't my favourite. My favourite was Gabriel.
Excellent.
Yes, the seventh brother, not the first.
Debbie Barclay, who I went to school with, and sat next to in typewriting.
Aw, so cute.
She wrote on the Facebook post for last week, which was probably the busiest post we've ever had. Anyway, she said, I laughed a lot at Friday's episodes. Only disappointment was that Ronan didn't run over Michelle, which is a sentiment that I think a lot of people have shared.
That's what you thought.
Tracy was fantastic this week. The kidney reference was hilarious. Johnny could have totally got away with his indiscretion with Liz as Hannah, or Dirty Kate in my head, as Kate wasn't seen till after Hannah arrived. Thought it was Kate in need of a good wash. Could have easily been portrayed as a liar. Jim is just a dick. Poor Jenny. Honestly thought Steve was going to be at the hospital bed, not Nick. Well played.
Mm-hmm.
Then Teaser got in touch, also on the Facebook. Great stuff, your show and the show. Agreed a belter of a week. Kate Ford was brilliant and good performances from the actors who play Ali and Jenny too, I thought. I would have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to wonder who styled Hannah, haven't you? Yeah.
She was styled to be hideous.
That's
that was intentional.
Just because you're wearing something honking.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's not deliberate, I guess.
Exactly.
And Teaser went on, also got pretty fed up with Michelle screaming. She's glad that Nick is back and looking forward to Hindsight Corner as you explain the plethora of relations between Nick and Leanne and Peter and Carla. Weirdly, it was only last year that Nick effed off. Tracy's impression of Sinead was magnificent, as was the kidney line. You'll have fun researching, remembering who she got her kidney from. John's thoughts on last week. I don't like Tracy, but agree that her impression of Sinead and a homesick kidney were crackers. I remember Tracy's kidney transplant, but we'll let you find out about how it all happened. My moment of the week was Ali's anguish after killing Ronan. Wasn't sure about Ali at first, but think he's now one of the best actors on the show. Not sure about Nick's return, as we'll now see Gail fondling him at every opportunity. And I quite agree about Ali.
Yes.
Ali's been a complete revelation.
I always liked him. There wasn't enough of him in the show before. And now I think it's just the right amount. The character has become more and more complex as we've gone along. And I appreciate it.
I like the kind of smouldering darkness of him.
Ooh, so do I.
Yeah, that works for me. And it's just, we'll talk about this in the episodes that we cover this week, which is just Monday and Wednesday. But he just has this kind of forlorn, just shaking his head at the ridiculousness of the situations that he seems to find himself in since being surrounded by that family. He needs to remove himself from that.
Seriously, you know, you can see a moral compass within him.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the moral struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been fun to watch that moral compass crumble the more Connor he becomes.
Indeed. Hindsight Corner.
Blue, 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 blue.
I used to cut them out and I don't anymore.
You did last week.
I haven't done it for the past 3 weeks.
Really? Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Hindsight Corner is taking up most of the room this week.
Yay!
There's only two bits I'm covering, though. The first bit is Tracy's Moroccan kidney.
Tracy's Moroccan kidney!
Y'all! Tracy talked about her kidney being homesick. This goes back to 1994-95, back to a time when Tracy wasn't portrayed by Kate Ford and instead was played by Don Acton.
James, that's... I was a freshman in high school.
I'd been working for Scottish Amicable for 4 years.
No, you hadn't.
Yeah, in 1994, yeah.
When I was a freshman in high school, you were already working for Scottish Amicable?
Yes, I'd worked in 1990.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I've been with this company for 28 years. It's conceivable I could get to my 50th anniversary.
No, because you're only 3 years older than me.
Uh-huh.
Okay, no, wait, yeah. In 1990, I was 14, so that works.
Yeah.
It's just a little creepy to think about that now. That when I was 14, you were 17.
Yeah, but still, thank you for doubting my own biography. So, in 1994, Tracy's mum, Deirdre, got married to her Moroccan toy boy, Samir Rashid.
Hoo-hoo.
A year later, and tearaway Tracy took some bad eckies in a club, causing her kidneys to fail. Up steps the bald Samir, who, wouldn't you know, turns out he's a perfect match. Before his operation, he was severely beaten up and taken to hospital, and the prognosis wasn't positive, so Deirdre had to give permission to the go-ahead with the transplant. Tracy wakes up from the operation to discover that Samir was now quite dead.
Mm-hmm.
Consumed with guilt and believing her mum would hate her forever, Tracy ran away to Blackpool and would only be seen fleetingly over the next few years before returning more permanently with a new face. Listener Claire put some background to this. She wrote in to tell us that the plan originally was for Samir to die on the operating table, but the writers thought that this might put people off organ donation. So instead, they had him beaten up by yobs. Now for the main event in Hindsight Corner.
Woohoo!
What was the deal with Nick? Strap yourselves in, folks. He's been married 3 times. Twice to Leanne, both times it barely lasted a year.
Twice to Leanne?
The first time in 1999, he knocked Leanne up but wasn't ready to be a dad, so encouraged and paid for her to terminate the pregnancy.
Ugh!
And then went about telling people that she miscarried.
What?
Leanne realised that she didn't love him after this and he buggered off to Canada. In 2010, he comes back and has an affair with Leanne, who is due to marry Peter. Leanne ultimately chooses Peter, but not before Ken finds out about the affair. Then on Valentine's Day in 2011, Peter and Leanne are due to renew their vows, with Nick being the best man.
What?
But instead, Peter chooses this moment to announce that he knows about Nick and Leanne's dalliance and serves her with divorce papers. Peter almost kills Nick, but he and Leanne eventually reconcile for a bit before Leanne leaves him when she finds out about his affair with Carla.
Hmm.
We're about halfway through.
Oh, God.
Nick and Leanne quickly get back together in 2012. They plan to marry on Christmas Day.
No.
Never a good idea. And Leanne is tempted by Peter, who has returned from Portsmouth, probably. During the ceremony, Eva tells the congregation that Leanne planned to get back with Peter, but cancelled those plans when Peter got back with Carla. Nick is furious and calls off the wedding and goes off to sleep with David's wife, Kylie.
Oh, God.
Nick regrets this and eventually marries Leanne a couple of weeks later. Then Kylie has a daughter, Lily, but doesn't know if it's Nick's or David's.
Oh, God.
David discovers the affair and deliberately crashes the car he and his brother are travelling in, causing Nick head trauma.
Oh.
At Lily's christening, Nick announces to everyone that the accident was deliberate. Kylie leaves David and Leanne leaves Nick, although they eventually reconcile. The crash left Nick with violent mood swings, and Leanne started an affair with his personal trainer and the two divorced. Most recently, in 2016, he was married to Carla, which was quickly annulled due to Carla sleeping with Tracy's boyfriend, Robert.
You mean the Robert that Michelle is currently with, although they're not actually married because...
Michelle's fiancé, yes.
Yeah, because Michelle got stabbed or shot.
She got shot.
She got shot at their wedding.
Yep.
And so they just called the wedding off and nobody's really talked about it since.
No, not this
which
was...
Which is weird.
This was in the summer, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
In June.
Yeah, it was in the summer.
4 months ago.
Early, yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
Oh. I'm exhausted after that. Squire padlocks. Are still a thing.
Woohoo!
And going strong, and they have a website and everything.
Excellent. I'm so glad. Buy a Squire padlock. They should sponsor us.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to say. I'm going to reach out to them and ask them if they're interested in sponsoring us.
All right.
Our Twitter follower count is up to 29. And at the time of recording, they haven't bailed on us yet.
Yay!
Also, we got a tweet liked by Jane Danson.
Woohoo!
Who plays Leanne. Isn't that nice?
It is nice.
What are you drinking? I don't know why we do this since we don't do a drinking game anymore, but I think it's become comfortable, I think.
I just finished a hot chocolate from...
What the fuck is that cat doing? She just tried to jump up on the chair that's holding the mic. And fell. Got halfway up. And then just fell off. And ran up the stairs.
Because she was trying to dig her claws into the clothing that's on top of the chair.
Oh.
And that's not very solid. So she just...
But then it's when she pretended that that's what she meant to do.
Right, she does that all the time. She's such a dumb cat.
We're like 15 minutes into this.
I am drinking.
Helen is drinking. A Dasani sparkling raspberry lemonade and a coffee, I think.
No, it was a hot chocolate, but it's all gone now.
Oh dear.
I had, and I'm not drinking any alcohol because I had two Vandermills peach ginger ciders, two pints at our local brew pub earlier. So now it's just Dasani.
Okay.
What are you drinking?
Jack and Ice and a Coors Light.
What's with your Jack and Ice?
Oh, it's Sprite Zero.
Okay. You're not just drinking Jack straight with ice. There's way too much liquid in there for that to all be Jack Daniels. I would be concerned.
Yes. It's Sprite Zero.
Excellent. Solo tonic.
With Jack Daniels and tonic? That doesn't go.
No, that's...
Let's dive in, shall we?
Yes, we'd better. Oh my God.
So just again to recap, we're just doing Monday and Wednesday. And if we ever finish this.
Thank God we're only doing Monday and Wednesday.
Monday. So Leanne is still unconscious with Nick at her side. He takes hold of her hand and encourages her to hang in there. Simon and Peter meet Nick at Leanne's bedside. Peter criticises Nick for doing a runner and abandoning Leanne, but Simon wants to avoid an argument and he wants Nick to stay despite Peter telling him to fling his hook.
Right, and gives Nick a hug, and it's kind of sweet, but, you know, all of the chest beating between Peter and Nick, two men who have done Leanne wrong.
Numerous times, it would seem.
And we just needed Steve in there to perfect the devil's triangle.
Yes. At Roy's Rolls, Toya tells Gail that Nick is back in town. This was news to Gail. She encourages David to go with her to see her golden boy. Well, why don't I just pop down to Freshco's for a fatted cow, says David. Where's the asshole been for a year? Gail shows up at the hospital and sees Nick.
I love that line, by the way. The whole fatted calf.
Fat cow, yeah, that was great.
That was hilarious.
Gail is pissed with him. No calls, no texts. Is this what it takes to get him to come home? But Nick's been busy. Gail asks him to come home, but he wants to be there when Leanne wakes up. At the salon, David reveals that he texted Nick after being raped, looking to chat, but there's been no contact and Nick still doesn't know about it. Shona thinks, well, maybe he should. So at the hospital, Leanne is off the ventilator and is coming round. Toya orders her to get better. Then later, Leanne wakes up to see Nick sitting at her bedside, larger than life and twice as handsome, he says. Toya is outside at this point, and then Leanne is so glad that he's here, she's mumbling, and she mumbles that she loves him.
Oh.
Then Toya comes in and overhears Leanne saying that she loves Nick, and Nick saying that he never stopped loving Leanne. Nick's not going anywhere, says Nick for the first time of many this week. Mm-hmm. I thought it was quite strange that Nick takes a word off a woman who's literally just woken up from heart surgery about loving him and just opens up and admits that he loves her and has never stopped loving her. It seemed a very strange leap.
Wishful thinking, I think.
Yes, perhaps. So outside the room, while Leanne sleeps, Toya wants Nick to fuck off. Leanne doesn't want him there, and all this lovey-dovey stuff is just the meds talking. Until Leanne tells him different, Nick is going nowhere. Number two.
Mm-hmm.
In the room, Toya asks again where Nick has been, but Nick isn't for telling. Leanne wakes up and has a much different reaction to seeing Nick this time. Toya asks Leanne if she wants Nick to go. Yes, says Leanne. That's not what you said earlier, says Nick. You left, says Leanne, half confused, half scared. But I came back, says Nick. And then a solitary tear rolls down Leanne's cheek.
Oofed.
And in a whisper, Leanne says...
That's not what she said.
That's not what she said, dum-dum. She said, yeah, but I don't want you. And it was one of the best bits of acting I've seen on Coronation Street ever.
It was so good. It was so good.
It was just incredible stuff from Jane Danson.
Mm-hmm. Two thumbs up.
Yeah. So Nick's back at number eight, and Gail is sorry for giving him a hard time. Nick is going to be hanging around for a bit. He's got a lot of making up to do, and can he stay there overnight? Later, Toya's with Leanne. Leanne is still a bit hazy on what's happened at the wedding, but she remembers Tracy, and she wants to know why Nick was there. And Toya tells her about the ICE thing, which, hello, she needs to update. She also tells Leanne that she told Nick that she loved him, but Toya set him right. And Leanne has a pause that suggests maybe she does have a thing for him after all.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But it's obvious that she didn't realise that her ICE was still set to Nick. You know, that wasn't a deliberate thing.
Yeah.
That she still had it. Which, in a way, makes sense. But also, in a way, it was a little disappointing. I was kind of hoping for some hidden meaning there.
Hmm. Back at number eight, David is sitting on Nick's lap, offering Nick a paw. Seems David won't sit for anyone apart from David. Then in comes David, who takes David off Nick and calls David a traitor.
Yes,
that
which
was
brilliant. David has the best lines this week.
Then Nick has a call and excuses himself. Gail encourages David to open up to Nick, but David isn't impressed. He wants Nick gone first thing tomorrow. And he says it in a very it's my name on the mortgage type way.
He's quite good at that.
The my name on the mortgage type way.
Yeah.
He does it all the time.
Yes, he does. So he doesn't want anybody to forget.
No.
No.
Especially Gail.
Right. And he calls her Gail instead of Mum again.
Yeah. Which saddens me.
This is when you know that he's mad, when he calls his mum Gail.
I think he just does it
just to get on her nerves.
Yeah, and then just normal conversation as well now. On Wednesday, number 8, Gail and Sarah are quizzing Nick. He has a restaurant in Nottingham now with a mate, and there's no one special in his life other than his mum. Gail's about to spill the beans about the rape, but Sarah shushes him. Nick is up to visit Leanne. She tells him to sling his hook, which she interprets as, please sit down. He apologises for the way he left, but he was making life worse for her. He didn't mean to make her homeless. What they had was special. He's not going anywhere. 3. Until they sort this out. What doesn't come out here is that...
Is any sort of explanation for why he left and where he's been. And there's no apology.
He also gave Leanne quite a lot of money from the sale of the house, which Leanne lost pretty much immediately to a con man. None of that's mentioned. It's almost like it didn't happen. Leanne needed Nick back then. They had their problems, but she thought they loved each other. But then he left, and her life's turned to shit since then. Simon's a psycho, Eva left, and she felt all alone. Nick is crying as he apologises. Leanne can't forgive him and can't forget. She looks him in the eye and wants a promise that this is goodbye forever, and he can't say it. Well, she can. Goodbye, Nick. Don't let the door hit your arse on the way out.
GTF.
Then there's a really weird scene where Johnny basically smells David's hair and thinks it smells like women. David offers him a batch and Johnny is very appreciative. What the fuck was that all about?
I think that's a very strong contender for boring moment of the week, to be honest. Or weirdest moment of the week. Do we need to add a weirdest moment of the week?
I'm not making another jingle.
It was pretty weird.
Nick meets David at the Rovers. Nick doesn't want a fight. He's here to apologise for not being there from what with the prison thing, his dad moving to New Zealand thing, and the Shona thing. David says when he came close to ending it all, it was Shona who saved him, not Nick. And Nick is shocked and made of questions, but David has precisely no fucks left to give and leaves him to it. Then Simon and Nick are best pals in the community garden. Simon goes through the litany of crimes he's got up to since Nick left, including mugging Nick's gran. Simon says he'll talk to Leanne, but Nick doesn't think she wants him around. Simon reminds him that Nick and Leanne were good together, and Nick agrees. Then on the street, Carla spots Nick in his car, on the phone to someone we see named on his mobile display as E. He says he's on his way home. Do people normally have contacts in their phone just by an initial?
Not typically. I don't have anybody with just an initial. It's kind of suspicious, especially since the only reason you would do that is if you didn't want somebody who has access to your phone to know who that person is.
Correct.
And if he has no one in his life and he hasn't been around his family for a very long time.
Also that, about a year.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
No.
At all. We forgot to mention that while they're in the community garden, Simon and Nick pretend that Simon's soccer ball is Peter's head.
Oh, yes, so they do. Take that, Barlow, says Nick.
Yes, and then apologises to Simon.
Who doesn't care.
I could not give.
So, do you think Leanne's resolve is going to last here? I'm concerned for her on Friday. And going into next week.
It sounds like Nick is leaving. So...
He's not come back just for... two episodes and one scene in a third episode.
Probably not. I'm more concerned about the fact that Carla has seen him.
Yeah. Carla and him worked better than him and Leanne did.
Yeah.
Peter and Leanne worked quite well.
Right, I was going to say...
But that's never going
to
happen
again. If I want Leanne to get back together with someone, it would be Peter, but that's not going to happen again because of the whole Toya thing.
And she and Steve just don't work.
Well, and Steve is with Tracy, and he's going to stay with Tracy. We know this.
Steve might be dead for all we know by now.
Right, because Tracy will kill him.
Yeah, killed him at the airport.
He'll either stay with Tracy or be killed by Tracy. Those are Steve's only options for the rest of his life. And sleeping with Leanne is
Sophie's choice, isn't it?
And sleeping with Leanne is what made Steve realize he loved Tracy, so...
Oh, true. Yeah, so there's maybe hope yet.
Yeah.
Our next story is all about Sinead.
Ugh.
Which I'm finding quite depressing.
It's the worst. It's the absolute worst.
On Monday, Peter and Simon are back from Portsmouth and they welcome Sinead to their dysfunctional family. That again, there's mixed signals all the way through these episodes.
Right, and everybody on our Facebook page, everybody was complaining about this.
They're not married, everyone says.
Yeah, because as we've learned that in England, it, like in Scotland, it takes a couple of weeks to...
You have to have your notice out.
Right, yeah. You have to do the banns. So, and you can't legally get married in a public garden in England. It's got to be
Not even a metaphorical community garden.
Which is hilarious, because here in America, you can get married anywhere. We got married in a hotel conference room.
Yeah. With a woman from Tennessee whose accent I couldn't understand.
Right.
Being a witness.
Right. I don't think she understood you either.
She had no clue what was going on. She was like, what the fuck is this? Put myself into. So, yeah, because I checked the end credits and she's listed as being Sinead Tinker.
Right.
So she's not being listed as Sinead Osborne or Barlow. I think it's Daniel Osborne though, isn't it? Yeah. So, but and then Daniel refers to her as being Peter's sister-in-law later on.
Right.
So it's like the show's doing everything it can to make us think that everyone thinks that this marriage is valid.
Right.
But it isn't.
No.
It can't possibly be.
Nope.
But they're going to force this on us. And every time they say something like this, we're going to say, but this doesn't make any sense.
You know what's going to happen? When Sinead is dying in the hospital, they're not going to let Daniel in because he's not family. And he won't have anything to prove that they're family because they didn't sign anything. No paperwork has been done.
Kirk will put on his little purple cape.
And say, I married them.
And that'll be good enough.
It's me.
Anyway, outside the factory, Irish Tina winds Sinead up. Oh, I got married in the community garden that stinks of dog shit and tramp sweat, she said. Sinead insists it was magical. Irish Tina is still bullying Sinead later on.
Which makes no sense, because they've been working together for a while, and now all of a sudden she's bullying her.
Sean calls her a meth head. Irish Tina, that is, not Sinead.
Yeah.
Carla snaps at her to get on with her work. Sarah isn't a fan, and Peter insists that he has it all under control. Peter calls Irish Tina into his office. He doesn't want any bother, and Irish Tina thinks that Sinead is a waster and just staring at his face, and it annoys her when she's working so hard. Peter is sympathetic and then calls in Sinead into the office. He wants to know what's going on. She's really off her game these days. And Sinead blames the excitement of yesterday. Peter gently tells her to knuckle down. And there's a shot of Sinead literally just staring at his face for like 20 seconds during all this.
Mm-hmm.
So Irish Tina does have a point. But Sinead just needs to come clean with people and she's refusing to do so.
Correct.
So, on Wednesday, Ken and Peter are wandering down the street. Ken's giving Peter a hard time for hiring Irish Tina, and Peter explains the deal. If you dance with the devil, you'd better know your steps, says Ken. Peter guesses it's a Shakespeare quote, but Ken reveals, no, it was Roy.
Ha!
Peter's loyalty should be with his family. Sinead is on the phone looking for her biopsy results, and Irish Tina shows her a video of a dog on a motorbike. I believe it was Eccles. Sinead is appalled.
Eccles is too small to drive a motorbike.
And that was just where the problems began.
Her poor wee feet would reach down to the pedals.
Pedals?
Yeah, the pedals. A motorbike, for accelerating, for putting on the gas, you push down on a pedal.
No, you twist the handlebar, don't you?
No.
Yeah, it's a handlebar thing. I think that's gear changes that's down there.
No, it's gear changes in the handlebar.
The brakes are up here. And then the accelerator's here in the handle, at the end of the handlebar.
No, the accelerator's the pedal.
Yes!
That's not accelerating, though, because you do sometimes when you're standing perfectly still.
You're revving and you're not in gear. Anyway.
You know what? My brother has a Harley. I'll double check with him.
Or once this is done, I'll Google it. And then report back next week.
Excellent.
Sinead is appalled by the video. Irish Tina's bullying continues and Peter comes in to break it up between them. Neither of them should be on their phones. There's an order that needs doing. After a fashion, when she's promised a call back, Sinead finally hangs up the phone and goes on with her work. Irish Tina's continuing to wind everyone up. Fizz has been eating chocolate cake whilst working and has spilled some of it.
Which is a weird...
And it looks like she's shat herself.
Which is a weird thing to eat when you're sewing panties.
Why is everybody in this factory incompetent?
Because wouldn't you get, like, chocolate smeared on the panties that you're sewing?
Yes, and that's a very specialist market.
All over yourself. And seriously, how did she get it on her butt?
Where did the cake come from?
She brought it from home. She didn't want Tyrone's mean Nan eating her cake.
Goodness sake.
Where is mean Nan? I miss her.
It's the stooges that work in this factory, isn't it?
It's a wonder they can sew any panties.
Iris Tina loves this and takes a photo of Fizzy's arse, saying hashtag incontinent workmate. Then she winds Sinead up more by saying she had a sense of humour bypass. Peter comes in and orders all phones to be in lockers, for the picture to be deleted, and the next person he catches on the phone is getting a warning. He really can't handle these women. So Sinead's phone later on is ringing in her locker. Despite the warning, she answers it. They can't give results over the phone, and they want her to go in tomorrow. And by the way, don't start reading any long books. Sinead doesn't know if she can get time off, and Irish Tina dobs Sinead into Peter, and then tries to grab Sinead's phone. And then a brawl ensues that has Peter running over to break it up, sending them both to his office. Which didn't seem like a wise thing to do.
No,
Sinead
yeah.
was standing on the ground, though. I was quite pleased. This was a side of Sinead that we don't normally see.
Yeah, she's usually a walking doormat. And she continues to be a walking doormat for Daniel. But the fact that she stood her ground with... what is her actual name? Because her actual name's not Irish Tina.
I can't remember anymore.
Is it Jody?
No. We're so good at this. It's Vicky.
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 Vicky. Sticky Vicky.
Oh, thank you, because I've been wanting to call her by her real name for quite some time now.
Sticky Vicky.
And I can't remember what it is. Vicky.
That's how you remember Sticky, because she's gross. And sticky.
And her name is Vicky.
Yes.
Peter suspends them both for a week. They'll be more productive without the two of them there. She sends Vicky out and then asks Sinead if anything's up. Their family says, see, this is another one. Mm-hmm. Peter's in their family. Sinead says, nothing. Everything's fine. She doesn't tell him shit.
Well, you don't have to be legal to be family, I guess.
Mm.
I call people family who aren't legally my family all the time.
Such as? Okay. Daniel's reading Ken's short story. It seems to work, but there's so many boobs in it. It's the first time I think I can remember the word boobs being mentioned in Coronation Street.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't remember. He says boobs that often.
No, they just grab them and mush them around and go blah, blah, blah.
That doesn't happen either.
It does, off camera.
Daniel's been offered the MA at Manchester. Ken thinks this is great, but the timing isn't great. Haven't we done this already? Daniel hasn't told Sinead, and Ken is giving him a row for not telling, as Sinead comes in pretending to be sick rather than suspended. When Ken leaves, Sinead tells Daniel the truth.
Oh, about being suspended, yes. Not about the cervical cancer.
No.
No.
Simon, who doesn't work at the factory, is at the factory. Simon is curious about his mum's condition, but what he's really there for is so Peter can tell him about suspending Vicky. Simon calls this a death sentence.
A little overdramatic.
Yeah. Then Daniel, who also doesn't work in the factory, walks into Peter's office, but he does at least knock. He wants to know what this bullshit suspension is all about. Peter says it'll be fine to Simon, who strops off in an overdramatic fashion. Peter and Daniel are having a cracking ding-dong in his office. Daniel accuses Peter of sexual discrimination, which Peter laughs off.
Right, because that's not sexual discrimination.
No, he knows the regulations. Daniel tells him he has no empathy. Peter advises that Daniel might have some empathy with his fist in a minute, which doesn't really work.
No.
Violence, says Daniel, always Peter's go-to. What's Peter going to do? Push Daniel off a cliff? Peter asks if Daniel will push him down the stairs.
Touché!
And that forces the weak weekend to go on a more human tact. He says Peter should have treated Sinead differently because he's his sister-in-law now, which Peter points out
illegal.
That is discrimination. Beaten all ends up here, Daniel says he'll end up with no factory at this rate, and then he leaves. Peter mumbles that sounds pretty ideal. Peter comes home and immediately gets it tight from Simon and Ken. Simon's pissed off about Vicky's suspension, Ken's pissed off about Sinead's. Peter doesn't need the headache and GTFs.
Well, and he's also pissed off about the whole Simon thing, too. It's like, Ken, give it a rest. And I'm really, really mad at the show because I suddenly have sympathy for Peter. I don't want to have sympathy for Peter.
But this is...
I hate Peter.
But this is what they do. It's like the wrestling. It's like the face and the heel that can swap over every couple of months. Characters you hate end up being characters that you love. This is why there's no character development on this show, because it's an open-ended narrative. If everyone developed their character, they would all either be angels or in jail. And there'd be no and there'd be no drama.
Or both.
Well, they couldn't be both.
Yeah, you can be angels in jail. There's lots of angels in jail.
That suggests character development, though.
Yeah, that's not happen.
At the Rovers, Daniel tells Sinead about the MA and goes over the reasons not to do it. Sinead insists that he takes the opportunity. Who knows what the future will bring, she says.
Right. She's like, you need to take care of your future. And he's like, what about our future? And then he tries to name their unborn child Danielle.
Yeah, Sinead's
not
having it.
And Sinead's not having it. Thank God. And then he said Danel for a boy. And it's like, no. No. God, why are you so like this, Daniel? You used to be a nice character. And now you're a shit.
I'd refer you back to my previous rant. So, I guess this is just going to go on until eventually the news comes out, which it
must. And then Sinead will die.
Yes.
Because she will refuse to terminate her baby.
That's what we think.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
Our penultimate story of the evening is Liz and Johnny and Jenny.
Ugh. Oh, this storyline pissed me off more than any other storyline. It was obviously written by men, and I'm not having it. Continue.
I'm not sure I want to anymore. On Monday, Liz and Eileen are recapping what happened with Jim and Hannah. Andy apparently is so mad he wants to kill Jim, but not mad enough to show up.
Seriously.
Eileen says, well, at least she didn't stump up any cash, and Liz admits that she's down to the tune of 10 grand. Fucking hell, says Eileen.
Yes, she does.
Jenny slept on the couch. In comes Johnny, and Jenny says that she knew something was going on. She was desperate to offer help after Aidan died, but Johnny just shut her out. Jenny reckons Liz had her sights on Johnny for months before Aidan.
Not true!
It crucified her when he took Liz to the Chapel of Rest. Johnny admits it was the night of the funeral that when he... And at the time, he felt no loyalty to Jenny. But in the end, he finished it with her because he loved Jenny. And Jenny's shocked to hear it was something more than just a roll in the hay. Jenny is offloading onto Rita now. Rita basically encourages Jenny to forgive Johnny and move on, but goes on to say, what's love without trust? Then Jenny's back at the Rovers and she's all talked out. Johnny doesn't want to flush the marriage down the pan, and then Jenny forgives him for sleeping with the Weatherfield bike.
Oh, and that just made me angry.
Forgiveness is a mindset, she says. Johnny is better than nothing, better than going to bed alone and waking up alone, like Rita.
That's just depressing.
Jenny doesn't want any promises or lavish gestures, just never cheat again. And Jenny seems to be more angry with Liz now than she is with Johnny.
Hashtag feminism is dead.
That's what I've got written down there.
Well, you have hashtag feminism. I just
in an ironic way.
Hashtag feminism is dead on this show.
Jenny is going out to see Liz. Johnny doesn't think this is a great idea, given what Liz has just been through. This is kicking her when she's down. Maybe just get her resignation and then put it all behind them. Fine, says Jenny, but she's still going to give Liz a piece of her mind. Liz has been to the police to report the fraud, but apparently there's nothing much they can do about it, because the police are only the police when they want to be the police.
Right.
Eileen is with her and says, how far can a man with a cane run? Liz thinks this was a waste of time. Then Liz sees Jenny buzzing the flat, and the two of them eye each other. In Liz's flat, Jenny accuses Liz of being after Johnny for months. Liz swears she was just trying to be his mate. Jenny calls her a slapper.
Eileen takes offence.
Yeah, go easy on her now. But Jenny doubles down and says no wonder Jim saw her as an easy mark. And then Liz assumes that she's been sacked, but Jenny couldn't care less and neither could Johnny. Come to work, don't come to work. Whatevs. At the Rovers, Jenny finds out that Carla and Steve knew. Jenny rose above it, she says. There was no hair pulling and Jenny didn't sack her. We'll see if she shows up for work. And Johnny is, oh, pig's tits. Liz is trying to get more hours at the medical centre, but that's not happening. Eileen doesn't think she should be going back to the Rovers, but Liz needs the money. Eileen wonders why it's always the other woman that gets the grief.
No shit.
Yes. It's 4 minutes after six and Liz isn't at the Rovers. Johnny wants to cancel the pub quiz because the pub quiz is still a thing. Then Liz comes in, dressed to the nines, and Jenny tells her she's late and to get to work. Johnny goes to change the barrel. Jenny goes through the back and puts on some lippy, and then tans a glass of wine, and then for the first time today, the mask slips and she breaks down.
That's all I have to say about that. Seriously, I just, this whole Jenny forgiving Johnny and then putting all the blame on Liz is just the most offensive thing that's happened on the show in a long time. It pisses me off to no end.
I think this is an all or nothing deal. You either forgive both of them or you don't forgive anyone.
Yeah.
And I think she's really forgiven no one. She says that she forgives Johnny, but I'm not sure that she does.
And the thing that really bugs me is the fact that she knew. She knew before Johnny said anything.
Yes.
She knew.
She knew during the whole Aiden thing because she left to prevent Johnny from telling her.
Right. She knew. She's known all along. And now all of a sudden she's going to be mad at Liz? No. No. This does not fly with me. I am not happy about it.
I can tell you have a scarf wrapped around your head.
Yes. My Liverpool scarf.
Yeah.
Yes. You'll never walk alone, Madeline.
So on Wednesday, I'll never wear cologne? I will if I want.
No, you won't.
No, I won't. On Wednesday, Johnny's laying it on thick. Continental breakfast, flowers, Jenny with her jumbo rollers in, looking at
a croissants bit like, from Roy's.
Oh, looking like Hilda Ogden, she would rather not do the big production. She meant it when she said that she forgave him. He tries to kiss her, but she shies away.
You're like, early days there.
Early days, pal. Jenny slapped on some lippy and is pretending everything is super duper. And Rita is in, giving Liz daggers. And Rita spends quite a lot of Wednesday in the pub drinking vodka tonic.
Mm-hmm.
Rita is imploring
Jenny. I don't think she's looking daggers at Liz.
Oh, yeah, she did. She drew a fierce look.
Because I think she's just drawing daggers at the whole situation. I don't think it's specifically at Liz. I think Rita is just appalled at how everything has gone down. I think she's very unhappy that Jenny took Johnny back, for one thing.
I was quite confused about the advice that she was giving her, because it seemed like she was backing both horses in that race.
Right, yeah, because initially, you know, remember, it was Rita who said the whole, well, sometimes you have to forgive people.
Yes, exactly.
Or else you die alone, like me. And now she's like, why on earth did you take him back when he slept with somebody else? That's not cool. And it's like, Rita, pick a lane.
Yeah. Who's Elaine? Oh, I'm cutting that out.
No, you're not.
I probably won't. Rita's imploring Jenny to wake up and smell the coffee. Jenny insists she still loves him and Liz is still there so they can keep an eye on her. And that's how that storyline finishes on Wednesday. So how much do you agree with the plan to keep Liz around the pub? Good idea? Bad idea? Really, really dreadful idea?
It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm glad she did it. Because Liz is the dog in this fight that I'm backing.
Liz hasn't apologised for this though, has she?
I think she has.
To Jenny? Didn't she
apologise to Jenny when Jenny came to her flat and started calling her a slapper and stuff. Liz is already down. Liz has already been kicked. Liz was already kicked by Johnny as well when Johnny decided to stay with Jenny instead of picking Liz. So, while yes, Liz has done some awful things, like sleep with somebody else's husband. And also when Steve said, what about Jenny? Remember that? When Steve said, what about Jenny? And Liz said, that's not my problem.
Yeah. Look, I was remembering things that happened a while ago.
Yeah. You know, well, yes, I can't forget that Liz did that. Honestly, I like Liz so much better than I like Jenny.
Oh, no, I like Jenny. I think she's good in the Rovers. I think she makes a good landlady. I think she's been better since she became the landlady.
I think she has found her footing and she's found a calling. And that's good. But this whole take your man back and blame it all on Liz is just baloney, because she calls Liz a cheating tart. And Liz wasn't cheating on anybody. It was Johnny who was cheating.
That's true.
So, wind your neck in.
I read an interesting comment online. Can't remember who said it, otherwise I would credit them. But their point was that the show made a mistake by having both reveals last week.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
That there was the reveal of Hannah to Liz.
Right.
And there was the reveal of Johnny and Liz
to Jenny.
To Jenny. And by doing that second one, it stripped Liz of any sympathy or a bit of the sympathy that she would have had this week.
Right.
Because this week would all be about, oh, what a shitty state of affairs for Liz.
Right.
And now it's not really.
But it is. It is, but yeah.
But it's in a different way, though.
But yeah, no, that person is completely right.
Yeah,
that there was just, there was enough going on with the whole Tracy and Steve thing and Ryan and Ronan and Jim and Liz and Hannah. There was enough going on. We didn't need this to. It felt really kind of tacked on.
No, I was amazed when it all came out in the same week.
Yeah.
Because normally, I think one of those things would have been... One of those things would have been normal. Two is quite unnormal, but to have three big things happen...
And then this fourth little hanger-on with the Johnny and Jenny thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's too much.
Too much.
Too much. And we were able... And it could very easily have been swept aside because we saw Jenny make the decision that she was just going to ignore it, that she wasn't going to confront Johnny, that she was going to believe Dev, that nothing ever happened.
Yeah, that Hannah was a psycho.
Right. And that was easy to believe because Hannah is a psycho.
Yep.
So for them to decide that Johnny is going to do this big reveal was
suddenly
just,
develop a conscience.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense and it's stupid.
Our final story tonight.
Yay!
Is Ali and Ryan and Michelle.
Ugh. This is the best story.
In the flat, Ali's doing the ironing. In comes Robert to confirm that Ryan is still critical, but stable. Then Robert does his skirting round accusing Ali of killing Ronan, and I'm still not sure why he's doing this. Robert is at the hospital now with Michelle at Ryan's bedside, and Michelle is worried about Ronan's cronies. Two Trumans are dead, and Michelle's sons were present both times. Robert says Ali is more affected than it perhaps looks. Back at the flat, the police are buzzing to get in to speak to Ali, and he just pretends that he's not there. The police bump into Ali outside Roy's Rolls, and they want a quick word. Carla is being filled in by Michelle and Tracy.
Not Tracy. Tracy's gone.
Carla is being filled in by Michelle and somebody else. And I haven't written down where this is happening. Michelle is pissed off with Ali for trying to treat Leanne and Ronan despite Michelle begging him not to. Carla and Robert, that's Robert, have their sensible heads on.
Yes, because Robert says, and Tracy look so much alike.
But Michelle says Ali left his brother to die.
Which is not fair. That's not what happened.
In the flat, the police think it's odd that Ali was present at Cormac and Ronan's death. Maybe that's why they tried to run Ali off the road. Ali thinks Ronan needed someone to blame. DC McKinnon inexplicably thinks that this isn't a reason for Ronan targeting the entire family, when it absolutely is.
Seriously.
McKinnon wants to know more about the treatment Ali gave Ronan. Why do they care about this?
Seriously.
Ali explains what happened with Ronan. Ronan wouldn't stop moving and wouldn't listen and pulled the pole out. McKinnon asks if Ali saw any weapons. If Ali had known about the gun, he wouldn't have gone anywhere near it. And then the police may have some more questions and ask Ali to hang around. Carla sees Ali in the Rovers. She doesn't want Ali to shut everyone out and Michelle will come round sooner or later. Johnny wants to know why he's not at the hospital. Ali is sick of the sight of the Connors and says that he's not one of them and he never will be. Back at the flat, Ali's slowly getting shit-faced on Lager, and then comes Michelle and she gets wired into it too.
Which is like such a Connor move. I'm not one of the Connors. I'm going to go home and sit and get totally trashed by myself and brood.
Carla has told Michelle about what happened earlier in the pub, and Michelle owes Ali an apology. She knows he had to try to save Ronan, and Ali doesn't really want this praise. Ali tells her how Ronan was goading him right to the end. And Michelle thinks this is even more amazing than despite this, he'd tried to save him. Ali tells her that she doesn't have a clue, and off he stomps.
Right, which is not fair.
On Wednesday, Ali is lying on top of the sheets in his bed while conversations go on outside the room. Robert continues to fish for information about Ronan's death. Ali gets up, and Robert and Michelle are off to the hospital to see Ryan get woke. Ali isn't for joining them.
No.
At the hospital, Michelle is crying for a change. Oh, for fuck's sake, cheer up. Michelle is worried that this Ronan thing really has messed up Ali. Robert, the busybody that he is, asks what if Ali's messed up because of something that he did. Like what? Says Michelle. Detective Robert suggests that Ali might have let Ronan die to save everyone else. And Michelle doesn't think Ali was capable of this. He's a doctor. He keeps people alive. Yes, says Robert, and he kept them alive by his inactions. Michelle's had enough of this, and she leaves Robert to be there for Ryan when he wakes up. DC McKinnon has a few more questions for Michelle at the hospital. She just turns up.
Ugh.
Randomly.
Seriously.
At the hospital.
I think she's a dirty cop.
She certainly has a history of screwing up investigations, let's put it that way. McKinnon doesn't understand how Ronan could physically pull out the fence post. He has a doctor right there. How could this happen? And what Michelle should have said is, go ask Ali.
Seriously.
How did I know?
Right, yeah. She wasn't there.
She tells Michelle about the gun, and Michelle had no idea. They arranged to give a statement later. McKinnon says the world is a better place without Ronan, and later, in the Rovers, Gail reckons this is like The Wire. That's quite funny.
Which is impressive that Gail watches The Wire, because you've never watched The Wire.
Gail's never watched The Wire. The person who's writing words for Gail to say has definitely seen The Wire. Ali's drinking whiskey at home now, when Michelle comes back.
Because he's definitely a Connor.
And he's like two-thirds of the way through the bottle.
Seriously.
She wants to talk about what happened. Ali says Ronan is dead because of him. Michelle tells him about the police and the gun, but Ali plays dumb. And I don't mean for that to rhyme. Michelle says Ali might have done something he shouldn't have and can't tell anyone for getting into trouble. She asks him if he let Ronan die, and Ali says no, he didn't. He didn't let him die. And then we both knew what the next three words were going to be, didn't we?
I didn't let him die. I killed him. Mwahaha.
I don't think he said it quite like that.
No.
Ali explains how active a role he had in Ronan's death. Ali didn't want to kill him, but he knew that he had to protect his mum. And now Michelle is panicking. She's got to leave in 10 minutes to give her statement. Ali wants to know what she's going to say, and Michelle says that she's going to have to tell the truth.
Which makes no sense, because she was all for telling lies when it was Ryan who was the one who would get thrown in jail.
Ali flips out at this. My own mum is going to send me to prison. Michelle wonders if maybe a self-defence plea might work. Ali wonders if she's having a laugh. Ronan was impaled onto his chair.
For real?
It wasn't really self-defence. Michelle says telling the truth is the right thing to do, and Ali, quite rightly, throws Cormac's death back at her. Lying is good enough for one son, but not the other. Ali storms out of the room, and we hear Michelle leave. Then Ali's on the phone to Michelle, who's waiting at the police station just as McKinnon calls her through. Back at the flat, Ali is ready to do a runner, when Michelle gets back, and she and Liz manage to stop him driving off, which is just as well because he's drank a bottle of whiskey.
Well, and it's not really Michelle that stops him. It's Liz.
What's Liz got to do with this?
It was such a weird scene because Liz walks out of somewhere and sees Michelle yelling at Ali, who keeps revving his engine in his car, like he's going to run his mother over, which we all know is not going to happen.
But secretly we're praying for it to happen.
And Liz keeps asking, what's going on? What's going on? And we're both like, Liz, what are you doing?
This
has nothing to do with you. And then Ali turns to Liz and starts shouting at Liz, telling her to tell Michelle something.
To move.
Tell her, Liz.
Tell her to move.
Tell her.
But what Liz does is opens the car door.
And turns off the engine.
Leans in and turns off the engine without Ali just, what the fuck are you doing? Slap my hand away. It was just bizarre.
It was bizarre, but it was brilliant of Liz. And this gives us a little bit of our Liz sympathy back, I think.
Up at the hospital, Ryan is awake and needs to know what happened to his mum. Robert explains that Michelle is okay and Ali was there when Ronan died, trying to help him. Ryan would have let him die. Ryan wants his mummy, and Robert looks at him like,
I want my mummy.
Are you for real?
I want my mummy.
But it's not your mummy.
But it is his mummy.
I suppose. At home, Michelle says that she didn't tell the police anything. She's not going to let him down. She couldn't be the one to dob him in. Ali points out she thought about it, though, and explains the grief he feels for doing what he did. He's supposed to be a doctor. Michelle gives him a wee pep talk. He'll go on to save many more lives in future. Yeah. Kinda missing the point. Michelle has made a cuppa and is pretending that Ali is her priority now. Ali thinks that he needs to face up to what he's done. He can't bear all the lies. He has to do it for his own sake to make the panic and guilt go away. Ali, once again, is the most sensible person on the street. Michelle deals with this by telling Ali how she nearly threw herself off a bridge after Rory died and how Robert helped her find a way out. She'll be Ali's help to find a way out for him. I wouldn't bet on it, Ali. You should have run her down when you had the chance. And that is the end of Wednesday's episode.
Yes, so...
Moment of the week, or moment of the partial week?
See, I really liked lots of stuff that was going on with Ali this week. You know, the facial expressions, the brooding, the obvious pain and anguish at killing this person. So I'd really like to give Ali moment of the week. But in all fairness, it's Leanne.
That is for me. It gave me goosebumps.
You made us watch it again, like three times.
It was so good. Just the way that she does this. She's half awake, but she knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And just the...
She finally knows what's going on.
Yeah, and just the realisation of what's happening around about her and what she wants and how she just doesn't want him. This person that she's been married to twice.
Oh.
And the way that the tear was perfectly timed. Oh, yeah, that's my...
Moment of the week.
Boring of the moment of the week.
Johnny sniffing David.
Is it Johnny sniffing David or Daniel complaining about boobs?
I find it hard to find boobs boring.
No kidding. All right, so Johnny sniffing David's hair is
boring moment of the week.
So what's happening or already happened on Friday and next week?
We don't know.
Yeah, you're right. So shall we wrap this up then?
I mean, do you think Nick is going to leave?
Well, no, I think Nick...
Carla's going to confront Nick.
Something's going to happen to make Nick stay and it's probably going to be Simon...
Getting beat up by Tyler.
Or convincing Leanne to do something stupid.
Oh, God, I hope not.
We must see Jude next week.
We'd better. I want to see him snap and kill everyone.
Yes,
I'm still looking forward to it. I'm just wondering what's going to happen. Because Leanne is awake now. She's in the hospital. But she's awake.
After major heart surgery.
Right. You know, and they've brought Ryan out of the coma. But the thing about Leanne is she's supposed to be on ice skating with the stars.
Yes, so she's going out of it for a while.
So she's going to be out of it for a while. How are they going to get rid of her if she's awake now? Do you think she's going to leave with Nick?
Oh, no, no.
She's going to leave Oliver and Simon. Terrible.
No, that can't happen.
Well, maybe she'd take Oliver with her. Or Simon. Oh, you know what? Simon and Leanne are going to leave with Nick because Simon's getting tortured by Tyler again because of the whole Sticky Vicky thing.
It's just like three very low-level thugs. This doesn't require witness protection. This better not happen. I'll stop watching if this happens.
No,
awful.
You won't.
It'll be awful.
No, you won't. What will we talk about? Boobs.
We'll do our boob podcast next. Well, they're still boobs. I think it's been maybe 6 or 7 weeks since Tracy and Abby had that conversation about how Tracy's going to get Abby her kids back.
Right, yeah, that's not going to go anywhere, is it? Because Tracy's in Morocco.
Maybe that's where Carol is.
And isn't there another character that's supposed to be in Darkest Peru with Carol?
Oh, Norris.
Yes.
I understand that he's coming back. Norris is a good character.
Okay, good.
I'm looking forward to him coming back if he does come back. He's not well, though, so I hope he makes the right decision here for himself.
We need some new characters, because for Pete's sake, we're running out of men for Leanne and Liz to sleep with.
Yeah, there needs to be a big event that wipes quite a few people out. And they've swapped producer, and what the new producer tends to do is get rid of some dead wood, so maybe that'll...
Who's dead wood, though, would you say?
Ken. Come on, Ken, give it up.
He's been on the show for so long, though, I think people would protest.
And you know, Liz is probably Deadwood. It's the same stories over and over again.
Yeah, but I like Liz.
I do too.
Get rid of Jenny. And Michelle.
Oh, for fuck's sake, please, somebody, get rid of Michelle.
Do you think they're going to get rid of Allie? He's finally a decent character with some development, that's probably why they're going to get rid of him.
And you know, that would probably be a good thing. Get rid of him before he turns out to be a serial killer.
Jude is a serial killer. That's how the new producer is going to wipe half of Coronation Street out. Jude the serial killer. We have figured it out. It bothers me that we haven't seen Angie and George in a very long time. It makes me concerned that Jude has already taken Angie and George out.
No, that would never happen off camera.
Because you'd think that they would have been at the wedding when Mary was so much a part of Tracy's wedding. I don't know. Jude's going to kill everybody, and that will be the end of the show.
So we'll have Everybody Dies 2.
Everybody Dies Again! Woo!
It is 11:35. Shall we wrap this up?
Yes, please.
Okay, if you want to get in touch with us to ask us what happened to a recap of Friday's episodes, you can either go back to the beginning of this podcast, or you can send an email to thetalkofthestreet@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Quarry Podcast. You can tweet us at Quarry Podcast. Find us on Facebook at Quarry Podcast, or hack into our blog, which is thetalkofthestreetpodcast.wordpress.com. And if you do so, please feel free to make yourself useful and write us some new content.
Right, because Gav hasn't written anything in ages.
Thanks for making it to the end of another episode. We'll be back next week with more Talk of the Street.
Bye.